This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Jeff McCausland, CBS News. He is U.S. Army retired, Dickinson College, the CEO of Diamond Six Leadership and Strategy. And Jeff has provided me a list from July 1st, the Department of Defense, of equipment that's flowing towards Ukraine, either there now or on its way. And we've heard that President Zelensky, give us more weapons, hurry it up, speed up the weapons and resupplies. But it's all been very general. And I've talked to Jeff in the past. He's an artillery veteran of the big weapons that are flowing there. And now I have a list here. So I'm going to ask him, what are the significance here? Jeff, this list includes 155 millimeter howitzers, up to 410,155 millimeter artillery rounds. Is that the biggest gun in the arsenal? And are those guns adequate for the offensive that Russia is launching in the Donbass?
Well, it is the largest artillery piece currently, I think, in the Ukrainians' arsenal. Whether or not it's sufficient, I think, is more problematical. Because right now, at least, we're being told by the Ukrainians, for every one round of artillery they fire, the Russians fire 10. And they far outgun them, even with the acquisition of these 126 guns. And by the way, this is only the U.S. contribution. Other 155 millimeter howitzers have been contributed to Ukraine by Canada, by France, by Germany, and several other countries. But I really believe if Ukrainians are going to be able to mount an effective counteroffensive, they may, in fact, need hundreds more of the artillery weapons and an expansion of such things as armored vehicles, tanks, etc., to conduct an effective offensive against the Russians in those territories they now occupy.
Yes, reading through the list, this looks like a parking lot. 200 M113 armored personnel carriers and other vehicles that move. What is the significance of all these drones? You have a long list. I believe some of Puma unmanned aerial systems, Phoenix Ghost tactical unmanned systems, the Switchblade tactical unmanned aerial systems. Is this the new battlefield I'm looking at?
Exactly right, John. Such things as the Switchblade are a very small drone which can be launched by an individual soldier, is my understanding. They can conduct both limited reconnaissance around a limited area on the battlefield. They can also be used in basically a kamikaze attack. And those, I think, were very effective, as were other drones, in striking Russian armor, particularly early in the war when we saw Russian armor out in the open. And, of course, they were very effective because they could strike the tank from the top, from the turret, on the top of the turret where the armor plating is the thinnest. This resulted in secondary explosions because of the positioning of ammunition in a Russian tank. And that's why we saw so many pictures early in this war of Russian tanks with the turret blown off, so-called jack-in-the-box. And obviously, a destruction like that was what would be described as a catastrophic kill, that being the entire crew would be eliminated. There would be no wounded because of the size of the explosion. As you go up in size towards some of the larger drones, such as the Phoenix Ghost tactical unmanned system, they can also be used for reconnaissance over a longer area. And this is where you get into how you create the indirect fire system, whereby those drones are going to be important in acquiring targets and perhaps guiding some of the precision-guided weapons, which you can get even under artillery systems, to make them more pinpoint accuracy on target. So used both for a suicide mission to strike a target, but also can be used for reconnaissance.
Looking at the battlefield right now, the Donbass is claimed by Moscow. Is that an accurate claim, Jeff, or have they got missing pieces?
No, it's an inaccurate claim. The Donbass comprises two provinces, Luhansk and Donetsk. And with the capture of Severodonetsk and Lysychansk, Russians now control all of the Luhansk province for all intents and purposes. However, for the Donetsk province, they only control about half of that. And what we're clearly going to see in the days ahead, I think, is the same sort of very deliberate, slow, grinding artillery-based offensive that the Russians have used over the last few weeks in Luhansk, now shifting towards places like Slovyansk, Kramatorsk, Bakhmut, other larger cities that are in the Donetsk province. Now, these cities, some cases as large as 100,000, have been fortified for a long period of time because also fighting was going on in this region back as early as 2014 when the Russians invaded and also stirred a separatist movement in that particular part of the Donbas. That's clearly where the Russians are trying to go as they move forward in trying to secure the entirety of the Donbas by now capturing the Donetsk province.
A puzzle. I brought to your attention a Wall Street Journal piece they've been following for some time, the Zaporizhia nuclear complex. There are six containment buildings. Only two reactors are ongoing. But according to the Wall Street Journal, the crew there, the people that take care of those facilities, are being held hostage and badly abused. The word torture is used. At the same time, the Russians have made it a military camp that the Ukrainians cannot counterattack. The reason I bring this up, Jeff, is that this is an odd kind of war Russia's fighting. There's nothing about it that's recognizable to me. They're fighting like marauders, not like a symmetrical army unit that you can deal with honorably, even in extreme violence. Do you recognize this army, Jeff, taking a nuclear facility hostage?
Yeah, I do recognize it, unfortunately, because it harkens back to what I was reading about the Russian army, operating in Chechnya, where they focused on destroying the willpower of the people by raising villages, by these heavy artillery attacks, which are indiscriminate. The strikes we see by artillery against apartment complexes, hospitals, maternity wards, train stations, these are not mistakes and errant fire. These are not marauding individual units. This is policy and doctrine. I think sometimes Western people have difficulty wrapping their head around the fact that an organized national military force could target civilians, including women and children, as a matter of choice and policy. And that's exactly what they're doing. In the case of Zaporizhia, it has a double effect. One, they can gain hostages, and they use that, in fact, ransoming many of these people. But secondly, they're putting artillery in and around this nuclear complex, which then is basically invulnerable, because they know the one thing that won't happen is that the Ukrainians will not fire back. There'll be no counter-battery fire coming on to that particular spot for the fear of damaging the reactor and releasing radioactivity. Zaporizhia power plant is one of the largest on the planet. It's only about 300 miles from Chernobyl. You know, John, it reminded me when I read that story of what I saw in Iraq back in the Gulf War in 1990 and 91. The Iraqis had a particular Air Force base called Talil, which is near the ancient city of Ur, where Abraham came from, would tow their fighter planes and park them around this ziggurat, this big archaeological dig, because they knew if they parked their fighters there, we would never bomb them, and therefore they were protected, using the ziggurat as a hostage to protect their force. And now the Russians, 30 years later, are using a nuclear power reactor as a dome of protection for their forces, well, they can still fire at the Ukrainians.
Colonel Jeff McCausland, United States Army, retired, CBS News. And to remind, next week, Jeff and I will be talking about the memorial to be dedicated on July 14th in Washington to the veterans of Desert Storm and Desert Shield. Seems like yesterday, Jeff, just yesterday, this incredible thing where Saddam Hussein had led his army to overwhelm Kuwait and what we were going to do about it. You were part of the answer, Jeff. So next week, I look forward to talking to you about Desert Storm and Desert Shield. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.